Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios in Toronto, we're live, and I have a big smile on my face because this guy is back.
I'm back.
After 3 days in Nashville, living it up, leaving the rest of us to slave away, he decides to come back and grace us with his presence. Chris, I'm so glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know. It's like kind of a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Must have been nice to party, but we're glad that you're back, and you did a lot of work in Nashville, so why don't you give us a little bit of a recap?
Yeah, it was great. You know, obviously I got to do the draft, and you know, just meeting a lot of people actually that we've had on this desk, you know, the Yahoo crew and Brad Evans and Brandon Feinstein,
yeah.
And you know, we had Jeff Ratcliffe and Mike Clay, just meeting those guys, the fantasy footballers, being a part of that draft, like I said, and just like stealing picks from Ray Flowers, yeah. Him stealing some from me, and Jeff Manns, and you know, Derek Van Riper is a guy that we've had on a lot too. So just meeting a lot of people, it was really nice, and the conference itself, you know, we'll have some footage on that. I was doing a lot of radio work, so unfortunately wasn't able to see everything, and you know, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, you know, winning Rookie of the Year.
Yes, we gave you some shout-outs yesterday.
On Target, a radio show that we have with Jake Seeley, Ben Ricciardi, and Joe Pizzapia winning an award. So, no, it was a great time. Thanks to the city of Nashville for having me. Fantastic atmosphere at the Predators game. I thought it was just unbelievable. Like, just a wicked production. Live music. Mm-hmm. The fans really into it. I've been to a lot of arenas, Ashley, and, like, you know, here in Toronto at the ACC, like, it doesn't even come close. It doesn't even compare.
Really?
The atmosphere is about 10 times better in Nashville. I mean, you go to a game on a Tuesday and they lose, you get to go to a free game. If they score a goal under 5 minutes, yeah, it's just crazy. If they score a goal under 5 minutes in the second period, everybody in the arena gets a Big Mac. Eric Young fired up, texts Mike Fisher halfway through the game, like, oh, hopefully you guys are getting me a goal, and then later on it happens. You score four, you get a Frosty. It's just a real nice production. It was fun. It was,
I love that.
It's a football town. It's a football place, but they're really just driving people in for hockey, and the conference itself was fantastic, so it was really cool.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you had a good time. We're going to talk to Pete Jensen of NHL.com a little bit later on. He was actually at a hockey game recently, the New York Islanders, though, so we're going to talk about maybe that atmosphere and then see what he saw on the ice, because it's different watching a game in person than watching
for
it on
sure.
TV, because when it's on TV, you only see, obviously, what the cameras show you, so you can get a little bit more insight when you're actually down at a game. And then Al Melchior from FanRag Sports is going to join us, and we're going to go through his second baseman rankings. But first, before all of that, we're going to start with some basketball, because it's been a very, very special NBA season. Between James Harden, between Russell Westbrook, we've been treated to a lot of really nice performances. And yet again, it should come as no surprise, Russell Westbrook, he did it again, triple-double, it's 23rd of the season.
Yeah, not good enough for a starting position in the All-Star game, though, but that's another point.
That's a story
point.
For I mean, another day.
Yeah, you're right about that. But yeah, Russell Westbrook, what can we say about him, Ashley? I mean, this guy could go up to $15,000 in DraftKings and FanDuel, and we probably still want to play him in lineups. He's been lights out. He's been unbelievable. You know, now, 60 triple-doubles, fifth
career.
Most all-time in the NBA. He's got 23 this season, as you mentioned, and now that's just a couple behind Oscar Robertson for fourth all-time, 41 in the season, and I think that he could get there. He's averaging a triple-double right now. He's got at least 10 assists in, like, six of his last seven games. He's so fun to watch, and he's doing it with not a lot of talent around him, so good on Russell Westbrook. I think we all kind of figured that he would be a fantasy stud heading into this year,
but
I don't think we thought he would have 23 triple-doubles, maybe 25, 26
before the All-Star break.
It's unbelievable.
And he had 27 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists in his 23rd against the Pelicans, a game which they won, and he shot 7 of 22. He hit four threes, but he's been putting up numbers like that and having statistically poor games in terms of his shooting percentage.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on him. Obviously, he continues to be a must-play. Obviously, he continues to be matchup-proof in every single cliche that we can think of in fantasy sports, but it is very, very
the
fun to
watch. The only negative thing you could say is turnovers. Like, he's had a couple quadruple-doubles.
Yeah.
Just concerning.
Which is remarkable. That's history, too. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis is someone that you expect to put up big numbers, too, and when he's playing, not only are his minutes through the roof, his numbers, his rebounds, they're through the roof as well, but he just can't stay healthy. We knew he had a hip issue, he had a leg contusion, and again, he played 16 minutes in that game versus Oklahoma because he got another injury. He left the game with a right quad contusion and was unable to play longer than 16 minutes, as I mentioned.
Not sure what else to say about him, Ashley. Like, I really just don't know. Terrific talent, like you said, but he just seems to be getting hurt a lot. You have him in season-long leagues.
Yeah.
You drafted him. You knew it going in that you drafted him, and it was a risk. You got him at a bit of a discount because he really wasn't going top five in most drafts. The only thing I can say about him is if you're into DFS and you're playing a lot lot, don't play him in cash. You can't play him in cash in the head-to-head because there's that chance that he's going to leave that game.
Yeah.
You can play him in tournaments and GPPs because, you know, people might shy away from him, and the upside is there because, like you said, when he plays, he's unbelievable. But in cash plays, you can't play him. It's just not worth the risk because you don't know when this guy is going to head to the locker room, which he's done several times in his career.
That's how I felt on Monday when you didn't show up for work because you were in Nashville. I felt like the rest of the Pelicans. I don't know, is Chris going to come? He didn't come. Did the show by myself. But I will say, though, Terrence Jones seems like the one that's going to pick up the slack. 36 points on Monday when Davis did not play in 36 minutes as well. And in his last four games where he's played at least 30 minutes, he's had three double-doubles. So he's the guy.
He's solid.
Yep.
Yeah, he really is. If he's available on your waiver wire, pick him up, play him. He has some mediocre games like that, but he can also give you some double-double games and some blocks. He's a guy that can touch all categories.
Make sure
like
you
that.
Check the matchup and make sure you make sure that he's in a good matchup.
Hashtag make sure.
Julio Urias is someone that we need to talk about because the Dodgers have said that due to his influx of innings pitched last year from his first two seasons, that they really want to take it easy on him, and you might not see him until extended spring training. And for someone who's not that familiar with baseball, Chris, I looked up extended spring training, and it sounds terrible.
it sounds awful.
Horrible.
He's probably a little bit bummed to hear that, but you know what? This is their pride and joy. We just saw them deal Jose De Leon, and this is a nice pitcher, a highly touted prospect. We saw him just in spurts last season, and you know what? They did that. They were cautious with him last year, you know, putting him in the pen towards the end of the season. And you know what? From a season-long standpoint, in the FSTA draft, he went in the 14th round. Expert consensus rankings on Fantasy Pros is 170, starting pitcher 47. I have him at starter pitcher 40. I might have to bump him down a little bit, but if you want him, and you probably should want him, you know, the K per nine numbers are crazy. I know he struggled with some walks, but he played some tough teams, Ashley, when he came up. I remember the Mets and then the Cubs and then the Rockies.
I do remember that.
It's like, oh my God, poor guy. But if you want him, now you can get him probably a little bit later. And this is smart for the Dodgers. Instead of, you know, shutting him down at the end of the season, you know, kind of limit his innings towards the start of the season, and then he can pitch towards the end, fantasy baseball playoff time. So I think there could be a bargain come draft day for him. He's a solid pitcher.
And in just a couple days, I spoke to our producer. Dr. Mike Sohn is someone who does some work for the Major League Baseball Players Association. And we talked about the 100 pitch count. Sorry, this is a bit of a sidebar. But he's done some research and given it to the PA and said that the 100 pitch limit actually doesn't matter. It's all about velocity, the types of pitches that you're throwing, the number of pitches per innings. So that research, we'll see how it applies to Urias and see if it actually makes a difference, if this extended spring training leave actually means anything.
And that's where he struggled last year with the walks, because you're seeing guys like Chris Sale. A lot of people are down on Chris Sale because he was more of a contact pitcher last year. Well, listen, what do you want? A pitcher that goes five innings, gets you 10K, walks five guys, or you want a pitcher that goes eight innings, a chance for the win, strikes out eight guys, and fewer walks pitching to contact? It's not bad.
We'll see. We'll see. We're going to change things up a little bit, though. We're going to be joined by Al Melchior from FanRag Sports in just a little while on FST. Chris is back, guys.
Stick around.
Or don't.
Stay.
This is Fantasy Sports Today, and we spent a lot of time going over Chris Meany's rankings, and quite frankly, I've had enough, so we're going to bring in the reinforcements. I'm just joking, but we really want to hear what other people have to say, because it's nice to start a debate, so we're going to welcome in Al Melchior from FanRag Sports to hear his second base rankings. And Al, can you feel the love between us?
Not so much, really.
Yeah,
I'm just scorned. Chris left me for 3 days, and so I'm giving him the tough love, like, don't you do it again.
Yeah, Ashley likes to bust my balls all the time, Al. But let's get into, you know, before we actually get into your second baseman rankings, which can be found at FanRagSports.com, the consensus rankings, and we have a board with your top 10. But I want to talk about a player who was recently traded, Logan Forsyth. Actually, minutes before the FSTA draft, he was dealt another young, talented pitcher, going to be in the Tampa Bay organization. We can touch on him in a little bit. But what's your projections for Logan Forsyth? What do you expect from him in LA? It looks like he's going to be not only the everyday second baseman, but could lead off for that club.
Yeah, and of course that leadoff status is going to help his fantasy status somewhat. I mean, probably not enough to bump him all the way up into my top 10, but maybe just short of it. I think, you know, we'll see just shy of the 20 home runs that he hit last year. That was a big power surge for Forsyth from 2015, but he is going to a pretty decent park for power. So I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 home runs, maybe a 280 batting average. And in that lineup, I mean, he could potentially score 100 runs. runs. I won't draft Forsythe as if he's definitely going to do that. But I would think, 90 plus runs would be a pretty safe projection.
All right, let's take a look at your second base rankings then and get to talk about the position a little bit. Jose Altuve leading the way. The young Trey Turner rounding out the top five. Robinson Cano, Matt Carpenter's in there. But we're going to start with Rougned Odor. You have him at 9. You said for Logan Forsythe, the fact that he's leading off definitely helps your interest in him. Odor is someone who doesn't necessarily lead off. As a matter of fact, he's one of the few in your top 10 rankings who doesn't hold that number one batting spot on a regular basis. Is this something that is hurting his value for you? Is that one of the reasons that maybe you're a little bit more low on him?
Not really. And yeah, I am low on him compared to a lot of other people in the industry and to a lot of people who've been doing early mock drafts. And it's just that, he's a young player, so he had a nice breakout last year. And I think a lot of people, and understandably so, are going to project maybe another step forward for him because Odor is still just so young. But I look at the batting average from last year, 271. And that was even with striking out much more than he did the year before. But he doesn't profile somebody who's going to on balls in play, and I could see him regress in that area, maybe even lose some batting average points. And he had such a huge increase in his home run power that I think that his path maybe towards a superstar career could take a small step back this year, and he could see maybe a little bit power regression in addition to the potential batting average regression.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his as well, but he's kind of down on my rankings too. And one thing I've noticed, and a lot of people in the Texas organization, at least some beat writers and stuff, say the difference between him a couple years ago and last season was he was really just swinging for the fence. And you mentioned he struck out more. He also walked fewer times. What do you make of that? You think he's just kind of coming out of his shoes and going for home runs instead of slapping singles and doubles. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the reason why I think he could have some batting average regression, even if he strikes out a little bit less this year, which I would actually expect. But that sort of all or nothing approach is not something that we typically see with somebody who has a normal BABIP, and that's exactly what Odor had last year. So I could see him batting, maybe somewhere in the 270, 280 range on balls in play instead of the 290, 300 range.
But does the fact that he's swinging for the fences and striking out a ton, does that fall necessarily on him, or is it more on the Rangers and the calls he's getting at the plate?
That's entirely possible. These things are always really hard to predict, not only in terms of what factors are going into that, the advice he's getting from the hitting staff or from his manager or maybe from teammates, but just, his own, again, being a young player, maybe his own process of trial and error. So I could be totally wrong. Maybe he does take that next step this year, but I just think that the gains that he made last year in combination with those strong fly ball and pull tendencies were a little too good to be true.
Okay.
There's a couple second basemen in your top five ERs, Segura, Turner, all speed, 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 speed. And then we go into D. Gordon, who you have at 13. Are you worried about maybe just playing time with D. Gordon? Because when he came back after the suspension, it wasn't a given that he was going to get his spot back. And at times, it was taken by like Dietrich.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I'm not too worried about that. I'm not worried about Derek Dietrich or anybody else eating into Gordon's playing time, unless he just really just is abysmal. And I don't think he's going to be, quite that bad. And I have no doubt that Gordon is going to be one of the top stolen base producers in fantasy this year. But I really do worry about the batting average and the on-base percentage, because last year
I think we just we might have lost you there, Al, or we're just trying to reconnect with you there. D. Gordon, it's amazing that the one home run that he hit was after Jose Fernandez.
Yeah, I remember that. That was an amazing moment.
One of the craziest stories in baseball. I mean, just to watch it, you just get chills
for
from a guy
who doesn't
hit home runs.
I know.
And just to start off that game with a home run, you could just feel like Jose Fernandez was
there.
Just there in the ballpark.
He was there.
Do you get that weird feeling from him?
I did. Okay, I want to ask you a question because we've lost Al, but I still want to talk about Trey Turner. He's ranked number 5 on the list, and we talked to him a little bit about him in terms of the quality of pitching he faced a little bit later in the season that could have helped bolstered his numbers. There's no doubt that Trey Turner is a talent, but my question to you, Chris, is that is he diverse enough? Oh, we have Al back? Okay, then I'll ask both of you
Let's bring
Al back in then. Okay, so is Trey Turner diverse enough where now that major league pitchers have had an extended look at him and have got to see some of his weaknesses, can he still be as productive even though they're targeting those weaknesses? Is he diverse enough, I guess?
Oh, he's definitely got a very diverse skill set, but I have real concerns about where Turner is going in early mocks, and just there's so much hype, and understandably so, given how productive he was last season. I don't see how he can come anywhere close to that. I think maybe he can maintain the stolen base pace, which would really be something, and that alone would give him a lot of value. I don't really see him having nearly as much power as he did during that half season or so, and I think the batting average could regress as well. So look, he's a top second baseman, but I would not feel comfortable drafting him within the first two rounds for sure.
Yeah, 33 stolen bases is a lot.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable either, and he was a huge talking point at the conference. It's just a lot of, you know, where should he go? Where is he going? Do you want to pay up? Al, we kind of lost you there halfway through. D. Gordon, do you want to touch on him? You kind of were talking before you got cut off about his average, and you don't expect the average to be all that good.
Yeah, he had a roughly a 30% soft contact rate last year, which is pretty horrendous. And I just worry about him, whether or not he's going to bounce back from that level to the level that we saw in his first season with the Marlins in 2015. So I have some concerns about the batting average. I mean, he'll whatever frequency he gets on base, I know he's going to make the most of it in terms of stolen bases, but I don't know how much he's going to be more like, I don't know, Starling Marte. I mean, he won't have that kind of power, but in terms of, you know, that kind of value, or how much he might be more like Billy Burns, because the profile he had late last season was really more like that, and you know, we saw with Burns that you can't really just get by on speed alone.
You've been writing a lot on FanRag Sports, you know, second baseman. You're going to dive deep into first baseman, and an article is going to post soon about Ian Desmond, who's a soon-to-be first baseman in Colorado. What's your expectations with him? Obviously, in a nice ballpark last year in Texas, a great lineup. Now he goes to Coors Field. What do you project from him?
I think he should have a great season there, but I have some worry about him. I think that, you know, just like with some of the players we mentioned, like Trey Turner, there's just such a wide range of possible outcomes there. And, you know, he's had great power and speed, you know, with the Nationals last year, with the Rangers. The question that I see come up all the time, particularly on social media, is, well, what about Gerardo Parra? Because people expected big things from Parra last year, and granted, he had the high ankle sprain, but he didn't have great numbers either before or after that injury. And Desmond's a similar type hitter. A lot of ground balls, some power, but not, you know, extreme power. But I do think he's a better hitter and a more powerful hitter than Parra. So I fully expect a 2020 season from Desmond. And I think he'll get a lot of hits on balls in play in Coors too. So I could see him hitting about 280.
Well, Al, thank you so much. I can't wait to read your article. And anyone that's looking to read more stuff from Al, you can find it at fanragsports.com, as well as the consensus rankings, which we talked about at the beginning of the show. Thank you, sir, for joining us, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Take care,
Al.
All right, coming up, hockey. It's the last day of hockey before the All-Star break, so we invited Pete Jensen from NHL.com on the show. We're going to see what he has to say in just a little while.
13 games.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Now, it's the last day of NHL hockey before we hit the All-Star break. So we're going to have to wait a little bit just to see Snoop Dogg perform, Nick Jonas perform. We can't enjoy that
Snoop-a-loo
right yet, because we do have to talk about the 13-game slate tonight. And to help us do so, Pete Jensen from NHL.com joins us now. Hello, Pete.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, anytime, Pete. Yes, so you recently were at the Islanders game, and that's where we're going to start. Montreal in New York to take on the Islanders tonight. You know, a couple weeks ago, we were thinking, oh, man, is Tavares just going to get traded? How is this team going to win any games? And Tavares has been, like, the second-best fantasy hockey player, depending on some formats, over the past couple weeks. You know, are you going to play him tonight? And what do you make of this Islanders team? Because I saw you post, they're back in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, he's in the zone right now. I know Anders Lee was out the other day with an illness, but he's been great with Josh Bailey. He was great with Nikolai Kuhlman the other night against the Blue Jackets, a surprising win in which they dominated 75% of the game. So that was impressive, and the Islanders are 3-0-1 since Doug Waite took over. Thomas Greiss has played very well all season long. He's among the top five goalies this season in terms of save percentage among goalies with 20 20 or more games played. So that's very impressive for him, especially considering he was getting very little goal support earlier in the year. So I would look in your DFS lineups, spend up for Tavares against a Montreal team that is depleted right now. Galchenyuk probably not going to play, Gallagher out, Markov out. Still a very formidable opponent, but Tavares should get you at least a point at home where he's been very good this season. And check his line mates at the morning skate, see who's going to be along for the ride, because the Islanders have been very good at home for most of the season, and especially since Doug Waite took over.
And oh, it's funny because I'm sure you know this, but a couple weeks ago he was the perfect buy low candidate, and I was able to acquire him in a league, and now probably not so much because he is pretty good at the game of hockey, and now he's just rolling.
He's pretty good at the game of hockey. Frederik Andersen's pretty good at the game of hockey. He's been on a roll lately, two shutouts in a row, but he's not starting tonight as the Leafs take on Philadelphia. It's going to be Curtis McElhinney, who was picked up off waivers on January 10th from the Columbus Blue Jackets by the Toronto Maple Leafs. With that being said, in his first performance, he was very good, 35 stops, I believe. And although Philly does have some firepower leading the way, Wayne Simmonds with 20 goals, Toronto, they have some firepower as well in their young stars. And quite frankly, the Philadelphia Flyers allow a lot of goals, the most in the East. So what are you looking at in this game?
Yeah, this is a potential high-scoring game, no question about it, with each team on the second of a back-to-back. The Flyers had a big win at MSG against the Rangers, and Henrik Lundqvist scoring two goals. Wayne Simmonds had one of them. I like any of those Flyers guys to spend up for. And, of course, with the Maple Leafs, they run three strong lines deep, and Nazem Kadri has been something to behold this season. He's been outstanding on both ends of the ice, and the production. I saw, you know, last year he had a lot of shots on goal and not many were going in. It's been completely different this season for the Maple Leafs and Kadri. I like Kadri if he's priced in the middle range in DFS, depending on where you're playing. Also, a number of those guys, Tyler Bozak, any cheap exposure you can get to their top nine forward group, whether it's Bozak or William Nylander. I like the objective of taking those guys against the Flyers, who allow a ton of goals per game. If they start Neuwirth, it could be even worse. Steve Mason's played well, but I doubt they'll start him on the second of a back-to-back. So we'll see. But this has high-scoring, high-event hockey written all over it, and the Maple Leafs have been outstanding, so you can't sleep on them.
It's funny to hear that you say those things about Kadri, very complimentary, and the script around him is crazy because he was like young guy, attitude problem, didn't really want to change the way he operates, but he's really come into his own this year. It's nice to see.
And with the Flyers, I mean, you mentioned a lot of goals against, like Shen, Voracek, Simmonds, Gostisbehere, they're all like a combined minus 60. It's crazy. Then those are the best five players on their team.
I was going to say, Voracek and Drew both have 40 plus points.
Yeah. We only got about 30 seconds, so I know that you got a couple players in mind for a lineup. I really wanted to talk to you about the Sabres. Since Eichel's return, they're 13-6-4, scoring almost 3 goals per game compared to 7-9-5 without him, and 1.81 goals per game. Is Eichel somebody, I mean, I was able to see him live in Nashville. We only got about 20 seconds. Is he somebody you want to play in your lineup, or are you looking to spend big elsewhere?
Yeah, he's dynamite. He had 2 goals against the Stars the last time they played. I would spend up for him if you're not going with Tavares, because the Stars' defense is feeble, to say the least. Another guy I'd look out for, Patrick Marleau, very cheap, 5 goals in his past 2 games, and also nearing 500 goals for his career, so look for him to keep it going.
Well, thank you so much, Pete. You said Eichel's dynamite. You're pretty dynamite yourself. We really appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Always a good time. Appreciate you having me.
Take care.
Chris, you're not bad yourself.
I appreciate that.
Glad you're back on FST. The family's back together.
You know who will never be back? Varlamov, done for the season. Hip surgery. See you later.